All right, everyone. Hi, everyone. My name is Melissa Egan, and I'm the Events Committee Chair for Partnership for Extraordinary Minds, which is hosting tonight's webinar. I'd like to welcome everyone to tonight's webinar, Special Education in the Time of Distance Learning, Take Two, the second webinar in our online series this month of important topics that parents of students on the autism spectrum need to know about during this time of COVID-19. Our featured speaker tonight is Kimberly Glassman, an education attorney based in Rockville. After I'm finished with some logistics, I'll be turning over the mic to our executive director, Sue Keisler, who will introduce Kim. Kim will speak for approximately 1 hour tonight, after which she will be answering questions submitted by participants beforehand and on chat. Kim will be addressing some of the previously submitted questions during her talk. After she completes her program, Sue and our board president, Laura Gordon, will be reading submitted questions aloud to Kim. Please remember that if you don't have your question answered, Kim will be putting up a slide at the end of her presentation with her contact information, and Laura has already posted it in chat as well. It's also on the screen right in front of you. You are welcome to contact Kim with questions after tonight's event. Some quick ground rules. Everyone was muted upon their entrance to the call, and we do ask that you remain muted for the duration of the presentation. We have nearly 150 people who have signed up for tonight's webinar, so we want to be able to minimize echo and background noise so that everyone can hear the audio. Secondly, as Laura indicated, this call is being recorded. Sue will be making it available on our website within the next day or two, so please do look out for it on our website, www.xminds.org. And lastly, we invite you to offer any questions or comments through Zoom's chat feature. If you haven't used chat in Zoom before, you can access it on a desktop or laptop by hovering your cursor near the bottom of your screen and clicking on the icon that looks like a conversation bubble. On a tablet or a smartphone, you can tap either in the right-hand or the left-hand corner of your screen and tap on the icon that either looks like three horizontal dots, tapping on the word chat, or tapping on the word more, and any of those should get you to the chat function. I do want to remind everyone that questions submitted in chat are associated with your username, therefore they are not submitted anonymously. If you would like to submit an anonymous question, please send a private message to Board President Laura Gordon in chat with your question. And with that, I'd like to turn this over to Sue. Sue.
All right, thanks, Melissa. And welcome to all of you who are joining us tonight. As Melissa said, I'm Sue Keisler, Executive Director of XMinds. I also wanna introduce Laura Gordon, XMinds President of the Board, and she's gonna be moderating the comments and questions in the chat, as Melissa said. Thank you for joining us for this, the second of our new webinar series. We started this series to help support parents who are facing a lot of new challenges while MCPS is closed. These webinars are going to continue to be on Thursday nights at 7 p.m., at least through the end of April. The format will be the same each time. We bring in an expert to present for the first half of the program and then give you a chance to get your questions answered during the second half. Tonight's expert, here to talk about the state of special education in Montgomery County during the COVID-19 crisis, is education attorney Kimberly Glassman. Kim has represented parents, legal guardians, and adult students in all phases of special education matters since 2005, and is currently an attorney at the law office of Brian Gruber in Rockville. Kim has given presentations on special education law to a variety of audiences, including parent advocacy groups, as well as fellow legal practitioners. In addition to bringing us her experience as an attorney, Kim also brings us her experience as the parent of three MCPS students. She also currently serves as PTA president at Flower Hill Elementary School, so she's familiar with the workings of MCPS from many angles. Thankful to Kim for giving us the benefit of her experience and her expertise tonight. Kim, thanks again for being here. I'll turn it over to you.
Great, thank you so much and welcome everyone. Thank you for joining this evening. I have developed this slideshow to serve as a guide for this evening and also as a resource for parents to turn back to later, so it is very text heavy. The text is intended to be there for people who want a greater level of detail or to reference back, but it's not something you have to feel you need to read along with every slide or every bullet point, because these are here just to make sure that everyone walks away with as much information as possible. There are also hyperlinks within the slideshow to the primary sources that served as the research or the basis of the slide. I will not be going into those hyperlinks directly, but they're there for people who are interested in getting more information or seeing that primary source. I will first be reviewing the federal guidance that we've heard from the U.S. Department of Education, going into the state guidance we got from the Maryland State Department of Education, and then going into some of those nitty-gritty details we've seen from MCPS over these last few weeks. I do have three kids in Montgomery County, a third grader, a sixth grader, and an eighth grader, who all have various learning needs that require lots of time and attention from lots of different angles. So I have seen the distance learning roll out as mom, as PTA leader, and as attorney. So dealing with it from all of those perspectives. And I'm also new-ish to Zoom. I think I've started using this in the last 2 weeks, as my youngest son has had to be on it for his classes. So if I'm having some technical difficulties, please bear with me. So with that, I will get right into the presentation. The United States Department of Education, very soon after schools started closing, issued guidance regarding special education services for students with disabilities. The first point that they made is that if nobody is receiving any services or any general education, that schools also did not have to provide services to students with disabilities. This was that initial period of time where schools were closed that were essentially treated like snow days. But what the Department of Ed also said is that once schools resume, the local education agencies must provide services in accordance with a student's IEP or 504 plan, and must determine on an individual basis whether compensatory services are needed. And during any period of extended school closure, if a student with general education needs is getting an education, if general education classes are being held, then students with disabilities must be afforded equal access to those same educational opportunities and the provision of FAPE. What we got guidance from on the federal level was that IEP teams should consider developing distance learning plans specifically to address the extended closures due to COVID-19, to provide for virtual instruction, phone calls, and other curriculum-based activities. So that was what we first heard from the federal government just after the school started closing. So what does that mean for us here in Maryland? The Maryland State Department of Education issued their own guidance soon after the feds. That guidance largely mirrored what the federal government said. So when school was closed, then no services were required for either general or special education students. But if a local public agency was providing general education opportunities, they also had to provide special education students with access to a free, appropriate public education. Instruction to students with disabilities must be aligned with general education plans, and students remain entitled to their related services under their IEPs. IEP teams are also told to document what will be provided during this period of distance learning. The state directed each of the counties to develop a system to do this and to develop written documentation to inform the parent and the IEP team of those changes. So I will, in my next few slides, go over what's been happening specifically in MCPS. And then again, just like the federal government, the state has guided each of the counties that once school reopens, we need to come back to the table and look at whether and to what extent a student might need compensatory education services due to a decline of skills or lack of progress. I will get into the legalities around compensatory education later in this presentation. So what MCPS has done is to roll out these individual distance learning plans. They were supposed to have case managers reach out to parents at least by this week. So if you have a child with an IEP or a 504 plan and you have not heard from the case manager, you should be reaching out to ask when that conversation will be had. At first, it was the case manager reaching out directly to the parent to discuss and determine what this plan would look like. But if you disagree with that initial plan and presentation, you can request an IEP meeting to discuss it in more detail. as far as what I've seen thus far, these distance learning plans are a creation of the State Department of Education. It's not something that exists in the IDEA. It's not something that's even contemplated as far as I've seen in any other setting. Thus far, the individualized distance learning plan does not amend the IEP. Instead, Montgomery County Public Schools is issuing a prior written notice which documents the services to be implemented during the school closure. I've seen some debate among practitioners and advocates and attorneys of whether a prior written notice or an amendment is preferable. My take on it is that I prefer this prior written notice IDLP approach because an amendment changes the IEP. It doesn't automatically expire. This is a specific thing created for the specific occurrence. And when the occurrence is over, you don't have to worry about lost services from the IEP standpoint. Your original IEP goes back to the way it was before school closes. So for that reason, I do think that the IDLP meets this very specific need of a complete unanticipated emergency without taking away services for when a student is back in school. One of the more important things in the state guidance is that it says consent is not required to implement this distance learning plan. So the IEP case manager has to document what they are offering, but if you as a parent disagree with it, just as you would with an IEP, you have to assert your disagreement and be proactive about saying, I don't think this is enough for my child. I think they need more services, and that you don't waive any right to FAPE. As far as distance learning plans and a free appropriate public education, none of the guidance actually defines what FAPE means during a period of school closure. My interpretation is that those services may be different. You're not gonna meet with your teacher the same way you would in school, and that's for our general and special education students. FAPE should still be individualized for every student. It should be based upon their unique needs and reasonably calculated for a child to make progress given their unique circumstances and take into account what is practical while school is closed. Instruction can include a variety of modalities. It can be recordings, telephone, live classroom instruction. I've seen for my own son's classes that the general and special ed teachers are co-teaching online via Zoom. It can be modification of materials. It can be other accommodations that are unique to meeting your child's needs. If you disagree with the plan that was put forth for your child, or your child is not getting modified instruction and needed accommodations, as always, I would say document that in writing to your child's case manager. If the case manager is not the administrator in charge of a special education in your child's school, you might want to copy that administrator as well. So the contents of the prior written notice, I have kind of gone through very specifically because it's a legal document. The prior written notice is the written notice that is required by the IDEA when schools propose a change to the IEP for your child. You get one of these after every meeting. They document, you know, what occurred at the meeting, anything that you asked for that they would not provide. So this is an important legal document at any IEP meeting. For this particular distance learning plan, there's language that is specific to the current emergency situation. So the first part that I thought was important to highlight is that this prior written notice is based upon a conversation with the parent and case manager on the date it occurred, to develop an individualized determination, including a review of the student's current needs regarding how the IEP will be implemented, consistent with the need to protect health and safety of students with disabilities. So important parts here from a legal standpoint is that there was no IEP meeting. This is a call between parent and case manager, and it is their interpretation of what the contents of that phone call were. The next part that I thought was important to highlight is the individual distance special education learning plan includes the following proposed goals, supplemental aid services and supports, and accommodations to be implemented in the least restrictive environment to the maximum extent possible to provide the student with a free, appropriate public education. And then lastly, it goes into due to the global pandemic and resulting closures of schools related to coronavirus, Montgomery County Public Schools and the parent have made an individualized determination regarding how special education and related services will be provided. This determination was made without an IEP meeting by agreement with the parent. So it's really important when you get this document that you read this word by word and line by line, because you're saying you agree to it. You're saying you agree to this happening without a meeting. You're saying you agree to the contents. You're even saying that you agree that this is fate for your child. So most importantly, if you disagree with any of those things, you need to put that in writing back to the case manager. You need to tell them you don't waive your child's right to FAPE. You can do that respectfully and understanding and encouraging that this is a difficult time, that this is impossible for educators and impossible for us as parents, but you know your child, you know what his or her needs are, and the document that they've put forth is simply not gonna work for your child. We've received some questions about students who attend non-public schools, and this has also been addressed by the State Department of Education. So the guidance that was written for the general for students in general education schools who have IEPs is also applicable to students in special education day school settings. There was some controversy at first because MSDE initially was not paying tuition to these schools, but about a week or so after schools closed, MSDE issued guidance, which is linked at this hyperlink here, saying that if those non-public placements are providing services through instruction, telephone packets, internet-based learning, that they will continue to receive tuition for those students. Each non-public has established its own processes for continuing education. So if you haven't heard from your child's school, you should be reaching out to them directly. If you are running into barriers with services not being provided by your child's non-public, every non-public has a monitor within MCPS who is charged with making sure those students are receiving a free, appropriate public education. So that is your next line of defense or offense, as the case may be. But most importantly, nothing in this guidance says that students in non-publics are treated any differently as far as implementation of services online or through other means. We've heard in the community some concerns that students in non-publics are being given a tremendous amount of work or a number of hours a day that they're expected to be online. Excuse me, I think that largely relates to how these folks get tuition payments to their schools. So they have attendance requirements to get tuition, and they need the tuition to fund their staff to provide the services. So I would say that if you're getting an overwhelming amount of instruction for your child, that's when it goes back to the individualized distance learning plan and saying, you know, we need more time, we need less work, we can't do Zoom for 3 hours a day, you know, my child can really only tolerate one. And being proactive and asking for those modifications that are unique to your child. So implementation of services and student privacy. I have heard a great deal of parents saying that their kids aren't getting services and the service provider is saying they can't do it because of privacy. I've researched this. I've spoken with other practitioners, at least on the parent side. I haven't heard anything back from MCPS that explains their position more fully. So my take on this right now is that the privacy laws do not prevent the provision of special education services. And that includes related services. So FERPA is the Federal Education Privacy Act, which applies specifically to education records being disclosed. And FERPA prohibits educational agencies from disclosing personally identifiable information from a student's records without consent of the parent. The Department of Education issued guidance for FERPA related to COVID-19. A lot of this guidance is around, can a school disclose to a public health agency if they have a child in their school that has been diagnosed with COVID-19? The answer to that question was yes. But it also talks about flexibility and making sure that we are not using one law and using one set of legal restrictions to prevent the students from getting the services that they need. So given that FERPA allows for consent to release information, I don't think it poses a barrier to receive services. You know, if worst case scenario, some class, you know, if there's a class of students who need to be pulled separately from their general education peers to get an intervention, I don't see why the school can't say, okay, you know, these are the six kids that we want to put in this intervention group. Parents, in order to do this, we need your consent. I've also seen schools that are starting to roll out, especially at the elementary school level, the Orton-Gillingham that MCPS started providing this school year and other reading interventions. It's taken a little bit more time, but they are starting to put those in place starting in the next week or so. My other thing on FERPA is that it applies equally to general and special education students. So if a third grade class can be brought together to have a morning meeting, I don't see how the same doesn't apply to a third grade special education class if they needed to have a different type of morning meeting. I have heard from MCPS and from some individual providers that Zoom itself is a barrier for some reason. But other platforms can be used for services such as Google Meets or Google Hangouts or Microsoft Teams. I know MCPS is using Google platforms right now for IEP meetings, so I'm hoping that means that they can use it in a broader array of services. The other law that we have heard about as a barrier to providing services is HIPAA, which is the Medical Privacy Act. And the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has also issued guidance about HIPAA during this COVID-19 emergency. And I am by no means an expert in medical privacy, but according to this guidance from HHS, a provider can use any non-public facing remote communication that is available to communicate with patients. So HHS specifically noted several as HIPAA compliant, which are Skype for Business, Zoom for Healthcare, Google G Suite Hangouts Meet. And what it says in that guidance is that these particular platforms disclose themselves to be HIPAA compliant. I don't think that HHS was saying they were directly. And the HHS guidance also specifically speaks to flexibility and to being mindful that people are going to need to access services. So just like FERPA, I don't see how HIPAA is a barrier to services. It seems anecdotally, from what I've heard throughout the county, that speech language pathologists have been using HIPAA as a barrier to implementing services. I've heard of a few that are providing services to their students and they're doing it in one-on-one settings. I've heard of others that are only doing handouts or parent coaching. So I've seen just a lot of inconsistency. My take on that is if one provider has found a way to do it, that means that they're all allowed to. So if you have a student who is not getting any speech language services or occupational therapy, I would be asking for them directly. I would be asking for a time and an opportunity to meet. You can be recognizing that maybe your child won't get it as often as they would during a school week when the provider can pop in and grab them specifically, but no services is not acceptable. So we need to get to a baseline of having some direct access to your child. As far as I know, at least my son has been getting his occupational therapy. It's been pretty close to what he would have gotten in school because he gets it for 15 to 20 minute increments. And it's not ideal, but it's working and it's certainly better than me trying to be an occupational therapist. I've learned a lot these last few weeks. I was never destined to be a teacher or an occupational therapist or any of those things because I lack the patience for it. And I would also say that if your child is being denied any of their related services or specialized instruction due to privacy laws, you should ask the case manager or the provider who's saying that to provide written documentation of why they can't do it. Ask them for a different platform. And if you are considering getting a private provider and asking MCPS to pay for that or reimburse you down the road, you need to put that in writing up front, so they know that it's a possibility that you'll be seeking in the end. So grading and progress monitoring, to date, There has not been a public statement about how the fourth quarter will be graded. For the third quarter, at least my two middle schoolers were each told that they would have two graded assignments per class over these 2 weeks. Some of their classes didn't do any new graded assignments, but the core content areas were not allowed to do more than two, was my understanding. I have seen ongoing discussion, one on the county level, but the county is in communication with the state to look into credit, no credit, pass, fail, incompletes, other options that might be available. I have not seen a specific statement on how they will provide progress monitoring that we get on our IEP progress reports, particularly for goals and objectives that they're not able to implement. But what I have seen thus far is an emphasis on flexibility and on recognizing that not all students have the same level of support, whether it's technology or access to the curriculum or parents at home who can help them. You know, working with my three kids, I have seen that my youngest will do nothing unless I'm sitting directly next to him. And if I get pulled away to do work for a few hours, he's not by his own volition doing his math. My daughter, on the other hand, has been pretty independent at doing her work. So I think the schools are recognizing that as well. For annual reviews, evaluations, and other legal timelines, according to both the federal and state guidance, timelines for annual reviews and completing evaluations generally remain in effect. The big exception to that is if an evaluation requires a face-to-face meeting or observation, or data to develop the IEP is inaccessible to the IEP team because it's in a locked school building, then the meeting can be delayed until school is open. I would say that for evaluation specifically, whether one can be done remotely really depends on that testing instrument and whether it's something that has to be done in person one-on-one or if it's something that can be done online. If the state of emergency ends over the summer and you are midstream and evaluations couldn't get completed, then I would be asking for MCPS to do them over the summer and to meet as quickly as possible thereafter. I would also say that if you are mid-evaluation or an annual review is delayed and as a result of that, your child misses out on services they would have gotten, that can be part of your compensatory education discussion. As far as I've seen thus far in the community, MCPS started holding IEP meetings as of yesterday. They're doing them through Google Meets and Google Hangouts. They are not holding any CIEP meetings just yet. So if your student was referred to CIEP for a more restrictive placement, because a lot of the non-public schools have suspended those admissions processes until we know what's going to happen with the state, they're not rescheduling CIEPs just yet. But IEP meetings that were scheduled during the time school was closed are being rescheduled. And IEP meetings that are on the calendar from yesterday forward seem to be happening as they were originally planned. So I would just say if you were supposed to have an IEP meeting in these last few weeks and you have not been contacted yet about rescheduling it, you should reach out to your school and ask when that will happen. Generally speaking, with respect to 504 plans, which are students who have a diagnosis and some sort of disability that does not necessarily require specialized instruction, but requires accommodations in order to access the general education curriculum. For these students, the same general policies and procedures apply to IEPs as they do to 504 plans. So just as you should hear from a special education case manager, 504 case managers are supposed to be contacting parents, determining accommodations that they need, any related services that you might have on a 504 plan that can be implemented during distance learning. MCPS is continuing with 504 initial reviews and scheduling meetings and all of those important steps. So just with an IEP, they are being documented through an individualized distance learning plan and sent to the parent. If a 504 plan expires while school is closed, they will be held over the phone or video conference, and meetings that were scheduled over the last few weeks should be getting rescheduled in the next couple of weeks. So again, if you have a student and you haven't heard from their case manager, now would be the time to be reaching out as instruction is happening. If you haven't heard from them, And over the last 2 weeks, your child had graded work, and especially at the high school level, graded work that could impact their GPA. I would consider asking, both for a student with an IEP or a 504, for an additional time beyond the close of the third quarter tomorrow, to finish out that work with additional accommodations. So tips for parents. I think this is a whole new world for all of us, and one we had absolutely no anticipation of being in. So when school first closed on March, when they announced the school closure, I was at my kids' elementary school handling PTA stuff, and I see school is about to close for 2 weeks. I was trying to figure out who was going to cover all of my work, how was I going to get my trials done, and then kind of had to take a deep breath and step back and say, okay, we're all in this new situation together. So I would say, one, be patient and ask questions. I think the relationship we have with our children's schools is one of the most important ones that we have as parents. So we want to be as much as possible on the same team and coming from the same side and perspective. We know that sometimes disagreements will arise, and they can arise in a way that is friendly and professional. So I would say you should always keep notes of what services are being provided. If you're told that a service can't be implemented while school is closed, document for yourself and to your case manager. Create your own organization system, one for yourself and one for your child. If I could tilt backwards a little bit, there's a bucket behind me, my son's workstation there, where he has a folder for each class, he has school supplies, he has his occupational therapist putty and other fidgets and such. So everything is there in one place. And then for my older kids, they get assignments on Monday mornings. We've been opening up their Google Classrooms together, creating a calendar together, so they can then do what they need from there. I would consider asking for regular check-ins with a special education teacher or case manager for you and for your child. So I saw somebody had asked a question on the chat before we started. Can you actually get more services or more accommodations in the IDLP than you would in school? And I would say my experience has been yes. Just even for my own son, normally he would have monthly check-ins from his case manager, and during this period of time, they increased it to weekly. Because, you know, being 14 and having ADHD and teaching yourself at home, that's a lot for a little guy, or not so little guy as the case may be, to manage. So you can certainly get more support and more accommodations because of this unique experience. And then as far as what happens after this is over, be prepared to ask for compensatory education. Be prepared to ask for an increase of specialized instruction. This can be done when school reopens. But if during the time school is closed, this is not working for your child, you can ask for an IEP meeting anytime along the way. And then, as I said throughout the presentation, if you disagree with something that is in the IDLP, document those concerns, request meetings, always be telling MCPS openly, and you can do it openly and positively and with, you know, all the praise in the world for the efforts that are being put forward. But you know that your child still needs something more. And then if your child is not getting modified material, especially for our elementary kids who are in a homeschool model and they are used to having a special education teacher help them throughout the instruction, for our kids in middle and high school who are in co-taught classes and now that co-teacher isn't directly there with them, you should be asking for modified material. If your second grade student needs work at a lower level, these Eureka math videos aren't doing it for them, ask for your case manager to provide that assistance for you. IEP services and compensatory education. So both the feds and the state have said that when school reopens, IEP teams should be looking at how did missing services impact individual students. We know that everyone's going to come back to school one day eventually in the future, and all of our kids will be impacted by that. But for students with disabilities, it is likely to have a greater toll. Our students are not getting the services that they would get in school, no matter how hard they're trying and no matter how well-meaning the service providers are, it's just not the same. If you are putting services in place privately because your kiddo isn't getting everything they would have gotten in school, you should provide written notice to MCPS that you might seek reimbursement or you plan to seek reimbursement. There's nothing in the statute that requires you to do that other than for a reimbursement for private school tuition. But if you do something and you try to get payment for it after the fact, it's going to be a lot harder to do so if you haven't put that out there and you haven't just let MCPS know that up front. As far as what exactly does compensatory education mean, those are services intended to remediate harm from a denial of FAPE or a failure to implement an IEP. So that's why that language in the prior written notice can come back to haunt you if you have a documented disagreement. Because the prior written notice says this is what we consider a free appropriate public education and the parent agrees, coming back 6 months later and saying, you know, no, that wasn't FAPE and my kid needs Comp Ed, if you haven't documented that disagreement, it just can create an unnecessary barrier down the road. If you are requesting compensatory education, get ready now to show that harm or lack of progress down the road. So you can do this at home as a parent by creating charts for yourself, tracking your child's IEP goals, trying the skills with them at home, keeping data, especially on things as like how prompt dependent is your child to get through this task. This is especially, you know, a lot of times we get feedback as parents that our kids are making progress. But then when you try that skill with them at home, the only way they're doing it is if you're sitting with them, kind of pushing them through it every step of the way. And then if there are services that your child is not getting at all, such as social skills or pragmatic language or other group-driven skills that are outside of the general education classroom, document that concern and that potential need for additional services when school reopens. It is not yet known how these missed services will be addressed systematically. We don't know that MCPS is going to come out and say, you know, hey, mom, we know your kid didn't get services for that period of time, and we'd like to offer you this compensatory education. Having been around the county for a while, I'm not expecting them to be proactively doling it out. I'm expecting that parents are going to have to be the ones making that request. So I would say the best way to protect yourself and protect your child is to document, to ask questions, seek additional support, and tell them that, you know, despite your best efforts and my best efforts, this is still just simply not sufficient for my child. I would also say that compensatory education is often delivered outside of the school day. It's not usually provided by the same teacher that your child has during the school day. And sometimes doing more after school isn't right for your kid either. So rather than asking for compensatory education, when we come back to school, you might be actually looking for modifications to the IEP to increase those related services. So I would say there, you know, I would love to see at the end of this that MCPS revisits some of their past decisions, that maybe getting the middle and high school learning centers and eliminating those perhaps wasn't the best thought out idea, and we really need to get those self-contained classes back for our older students. And the homeschool model, I think it's a wonderful concept, but have we really been staffing it at the level it needs to be staffed for these kids to get their needs met and for our teachers, quite frankly, to have the bandwidth to do all the work, because it's a ton of work that they have to do for our kiddos. So maybe after this is all said and done, we can infuse our schools with more supports. So a few other points I just wanted to make before opening up to questions. If you have multiple providers who are contacting you for your child, consider starting a single email chain so you're all communicating together. For our middle and high school students, at least my kids have some classes on Google Classroom, some on MCPS, my MCPS, and some places they're getting via email. So ask for help from your case manager, perhaps to consolidate communication to one email stream so you're able to help and follow it along. And most importantly, you know, we know how hard everyone is trying. I think the more that the schools know how much you appreciate that they're doing the best they can, but also, again, the best you can just unfortunately is not going to allow my child to make progress and continue to be making those asks for whatever it is that you think your student might need. So with that, I think, as always, I talked faster than I planned, so I do apologize if I was too speedy. But the slideshow will be available on the website, and we can open it up to questions from the chat.
Okay, thank you so much, Kim. That was a lot of great information and a lot of very practical information. Now we're going to get to the questions and answers portion of the program. First, we'll start with questions that were submitted by participants back when they registered. Many of those questions Kim was able to answer in her presentation already, but for those questions that she hasn't yet answered, I will ask those now. And then we'll move to the questions in the chat, which Laura Gordon will pose to Kim as time permits. And please remember that if your question isn't answered tonight, you can reach out to Kim directly by email once tonight's program's over. Her contact information is on the screen. All right, so here's a question that quite a few parents were wondering about. They're wondering about one-on-one support. So where IEPs call for a one-to-one instruction or small group instruction, what should we expect from schools in the distance learning model?
So at least what I have seen thus far, I have seen paraeducators who are usually in the classroom. I've seen them on the Zooms with the general education students. I've also seen co-teaching happening within those Zoom conferences. You know, I don't know how practical it is or if they're, I make my son put on headphones because I don't want to look like I'm listening in on his class. So I don't know how much they're able to interject, but I have physically seen that general education classes are being supported by the same paraeducators that they have during the regular school day. Some one-on-one support will be impossible to provide by anyone other than mom or dad or big brother or big sister at home. So I would say that if you have a child who needs one-on-one support and they're not getting it, and or even if they need one-on-one support and you're the one providing it so they can make it through this, to document that. If you need more help or more suggestions or more guidance, always ask your child's teacher. They know their learning style. They know what they saw in the classroom. They have probably, at least in my case, a lot more patience for a jumpy 9-year-old, so they can give some tricks of the trade to help you as a parent get through it.
Okay, thanks. Here's another question. This is a practical question that a lot of parents would like to know the answer to. Online classes do not seem to be working well for us. Suggestions?
That's a really tough one, because if online classes aren't working, there's no opportunity for in-person instruction. Again, that's where you're kind of left a lot of times to your own devices or to asking for support from the teacher or the service provider to help you break it down more for your child. I know at my kids' elementary school, some of the teachers have been doing one-on-one with individual students. I don't know how prevalent that is throughout the county, but I don't think there's anything wrong with us as parents asking for more when our kids need more. Asking for more resources, asking for any other ideas that they might have. So I would say, again, it goes back to that asking questions and documenting your concerns when those questions are not being met with a response that meets your child's needs.
Thanks. Okay, here's one, a question that comes from an educational advocate. One of my clients relayed that her kid's case manager was told that her advocate cannot be on distance learning plan calls unless the parent requests that the meeting be turned into an official IEP meeting. I don't believe that the mere presence of an advocate automatically makes a meeting an official IEP meeting. Could Ms. Glassman weigh in on this?
Yes. So I don't see how it would make it an official IEP meeting either. I mean, the distance learning plan meeting was invented 3 weeks ago. So by having the parent have someone to support them through it, I don't see how that changes the construct of the conversation. You know, we do know that when parents bring advocates and attorneys to meetings, MCPS views them as more official and they take a more official stance sometimes. So if including your advocate in the meeting leads to something more official as far as MCPS's perspective, as long as that's not causing a delay for your child, I wouldn't get too hung up on the label of the meeting. But where it becomes concerning is if you hear, well, if your advocate wants to be on the call, we can't have this meeting for 2.5 weeks because that's when we're available. And until then, you know, best of luck to you. That's where I would view it as problematic. But from my perspective, just adding an additional person to the call to help a parent understand the process and what they're agreeing to should not change the nature of the conversation.
Okay, and this is the last of the questions that was left from that people submitted beforehand, because you covered an awful lot of them in your presentation, which is great. It'll leave a lot more time for chat questions. So here's the last one. It is about compensatory education. If a parent works hard and pays for extra virtual therapies to prevent their child from losing skills, can they still get comp ed reimbursement if they're successful in preventing a loss in skills? And a related question, what if their child actually makes more progress than they did when they were in school?
So I would say compensatory education generally occurs because there's been a lack of progress or harm. So if you're being a proactive parent and you're hiring service providers because your child is not getting what they were getting in school, you should be on the front end of that conversation, noticing MCPS of, you know, my child would usually get X service in school. They're not getting it. I understand there's nothing you can do about it, but I'm going to hire someone privately who can do it, and I will be seeking reimbursement. That's the best way I think a parent can protect themselves in that circumstance. Can you repeat the second part of that question about progress?
Okay, so if they actually end up through the parent working so hard at this with the child, that the child actually does better than they were doing at school, is there any hope for compensation or compensatory education? I mean, basically, the child hasn't gotten what they were supposed to through the IEP. The parent Right. provided it instead, and maybe even provided more. So there wasn't the deficit, because we all would like to prevent that anyway.
Yes.
So can you get comp ed if that's your situation?
Because comp ed is a service. It's not compensation in the form of money. So I would say because it's a service, that probably not. So that is why I would suggest before hiring a team of people to help you through this process, if you plan or think you might want to get reimbursement, I would put MCPS on notice on the front end of that.
It can sometimes be in the form of reimbursement though, can it, if you spend money?
It can if you spend money, and you can go back and say, you know, MCPS was not providing my child with the group speech therapy that they would have gotten, but this other provider found a way to do it and I paid for it, so I'd like my money back now, please. That is a way of reimbursing parents, but generally speaking, I always recommend providing notice before you're going to do that. I think it's possible without notice. I just think it becomes more of a legal situation that you might have to fight about a little bit more to make happen successfully.
All right, then I think now we'll move to Laura, and you can post some questions from the chat.
Okay, I will do that. Okay, are the services on the IEP equivalent, like hour-wise? Like, let's say, you know, you have 0.25 hours of speech or whatever it is. Are they equivalent in the distance learning plan? Like, should they be equivalent, or is there room for, you know, some adjustment there?
I have not generally seen them be exactly equivalent, mostly because neither is the school day of instruction. So right now, you know, my elementary school student has Zoom class with his teacher for roughly an hour a day, rather than a full school day. So the distance learning plans are primarily right now what is practical or what is available. They're not necessarily equal, which is why if you have any thought or feeling that that's not going to work or be enough for your child, or even, you know, this IEP was written for a reason and he needs all of it, then I would recommend documenting that disagreement with it. I have seen, you know, some kids anecdotally getting a rough approximation that is close to what they were getting in school. But just practically speaking, it's not been everything that they were getting in school.
Okay. And you had mentioned, I think you gave your own child as an example of their meeting with their counselor or case manager or whatever more often because of the situation. We had one parent ask that question about resource period for their middle and or high schooler. And it sounds like you may have answered that, but it sounds like they need more support for the resource period that their child was receiving. So it sounds like they can just ask for more support for that resource period.
In my son's case, it's not a resource period. It was more of a executive functioning organizational check-in type situation because it wasn't to replace an existing class. It was intended to help him just stay on top of the level of independence he has now been given over his own instruction. And the check-ins are not necessarily in person. You know, some of them are on Zoom, some of them are by email, but it's more of a, you know, have you done all your work this week? I noticed you didn't turn this thing in yet. Do you need help doing this thing, this assignment? And those sorts of kind of organizational supports. So I would definitely say if your child had a resource class and you haven't gotten an equivalent replacement of that you should be asking for. You should be asking for the support you think your child needs and for them to come up with the best way to provide it under these circumstances.
Okay, that makes sense. We're getting a few questions about, you had mentioned putting everything in writing, documenting. So should everything be like to the entire IEP team? Like who should be getting it? How is it documented? So, like, you know, so parents are, you know, dotting all their I's and crossing all their T's. What's sort of the best way to make sure the right people are getting the information?
So for the distance learning plan itself, it is going to the parent and it's supposed to be going to all of the child's teachers so they know what they're still charged with doing for that individual student. As far as if you are documenting something you disagree with, I usually include, when I'm doing that professionally, the case manager and sometimes compliance. I apologize, my dog has decided now is a really good time to bark. But sometimes the case manager is not the administrator responsible for special education. So if you're worrying about, am I providing notice to the right people? I always include the chain of command. So usually an assistant principal or a principal. You know, a lot of times we ask the case manager nicely first. We try to work it out. And if it doesn't work out, that is when we elevate it. If you can, I'm going to put this on mute a second and call for some dog assistance if you don't mind.
That's fine. We'll give her a minute to take care of the dog issue.
Real world problems.
Totally.
All right, sorry about that. When I kicked my family into the basement, I didn't think of the dogs.
That's okay. All right, one of the questions was, can you request assistive technology in the scope of the learning environment since it's changed, like headphones, devices? So, you know, taking into account the distance learning environment, like how does the assistive technology and other aids sort of play into everything?
I would say that if your child's needs are different because their placement is different, and by placement I mean our living rooms and couches, then you can be asking for services and assistive technology that are specific to those circumstances. MCPS has 12-month employees at the central office who are working. They are still distributing Chromebooks to students who need them. So if there's other assistive technology that you find that your child needs, or even if you're not sure that they might need it, I would ask for, you know, help from that case manager or special education provider to say, you know, this is what I'm seeing at home. My kid, you know, is there something, is there a device, is there a program, is there something that can help them through this that you can provide me access to now?
Okay. Yep. All right. Another question. Can the services section of the distance learning plan say services will be made available to the student, but with no sort of detail? Like, it could it just say, yes, it's going to happen?
The ones that I've seen thus far have included detail. So I would say that it shouldn't be completely vague. Because this is, you know, a new made up thing, it's not like it has the same, you know, level of required language that perhaps an IEP would have. But I think you can ask for it. And I think if you're being told, you know, the related service provider will contact you separately, but we're not going to put it here in this document, you can object to that. And you can say, you know, this is the plan that we're all supposed to stick to while we're out of school. I need everything here. And if the answer to that is no, we're not going to do it, we're doing it this way instead, that's when I think it becomes on us as parents to be proactive in our documentation and send that, you know, this is what happened with my case manager call, this is what's not included in my child's plan, I need everyone needs to be on the same page. So I'm documenting here what my child will be receiving.
All right, so can you talk a little bit about why related service providers why parents are being told that the related service providers are going to contact them separately, why there seems to be sort of a separate accountability happening there?
I think, as far as I can tell, that the related service providers are coming under HIPAA as far as their privacy requirements go. That is just what I'm being told by providers directly. So because of that, they have a higher level of things that they need to comply with. But just because they're contacting you separately doesn't mean that the parent can't try to bring that all together. So accountability-wise, it's all a matter of what services is my child getting, what services is my child not getting, and what is the impact of that when they come back to school and we're ready to be in a more traditional setting again? So anytime that you have doubt about accountability, about documentation, about how you're receiving information, I would try to self-correct and course correct as the parent who, you know, we're all kind of acting as case managers right now for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you talk a little bit more about you mentioned compensatory ed is a service, but it might be a reimbursement. Can you talk about maybe some specific examples of what that looks like? You mentioned after school programs could be in the future, but if you have any specific examples of what you've seen in the past of what compensatory education might literally look like for some of these kids.
So what I have seen it look like most often is a provider who is not generally assigned to them during the school day, who works with your child after school hours. It could be at home, it could be at a tutoring center or, you know, therapy center, if you will, that MCPS agrees to pay for the services because of a period that they did not provide sufficient appropriate services to your child, or there was some sort of educational harm. So for the most part, compensatory education services are things that happen outside of a regular school day. And what I've seen, though in my practice, I've gotten more combat awards in DC just because more of my practice was there until recently. A lot of times we get these really awesome awards, but then it is impractical for our children to access them in the way that they were intended because it is like an overload. So sometimes compensatory education kind of sounds better than it is. And the other downside of compensatory education is you're in kind of recuperation mode. You're making up for lost time, and it's not always a... It's easy to say, okay, we'll make up for this later, it's a lot harder for your kid to actually make up that lost ground down the road. So, but generally speaking, compensatory education are services intended to remediate an educational harm caused by a failure to provide a free, appropriate public education for a period of time.
Okay, gotcha. A few parents have asked specifically about the distance learning plan, which you have talked about a little bit. It sounds like some folks either haven't heard from their case managers, forgive me if you already addressed this. Mm-hmm. It's not the same timeline. What are the timelines for that specifically, or is there a timeline since it's all new and made up, as you said?
The timeline that I saw originally from MCPS was that parents should have been contacted for that initial conversation last week. I understand that some plans are still being written, particularly as special education teachers are getting training on how to implement specific modalities of intervention online. So some of them haven't been written yet because they're actually working out how are we going to provide Orton-Gillingham starting next week? How are we going to do this really great reading program or blast off to reading? So the people I know who haven't gotten them have been primarily those who are waiting for a plan from the teacher for how to actually implement the service. I would think everyone would have them by next week, and everyone should have had an initial contact by now about what to expect for your child. The initial contact should have, most of the people I know got some combination of phone calls and emails from their child's teacher or case manager.
Okay, so if they haven't, and they maybe don't know who their case manager is, who should they contact? The principal, the vice principal, who's the teacher? Who should they contact, do you think?
Usually I go with all of the above. So the principal is always kind of the commander of the ship, if you will. So the principal should be able to get any parent to the right point of contact for their child. But sometimes, you know, assistant principals are more, I always go with more is better as long as I'm being nice to everyone.
Gotcha. Okay. Another question. So someone asked a question about like the milestones and the progress during this time. And we've talked about compensatory education. Have you seen that any of the distance learning plans have sort of said, well, we're not going to worry as much about this milestone because of the situation? Sort of how have they handled that sort of like
differences? I've seen mostly this is not something that's possible to work on right now, so we're just not going to do it, particularly when it comes to things like social skills and pragmatic language that are requiring a group of kids that can't be pulled together at this moment. I've also seen it with physical therapy where, you know, if you have a student who gets physical therapy, they've been giving parents coaching on how to do it at home with the equipment they have available, or no equipment in some cases. So I've seen them documented by simply saying, you know, because of the circumstance and because we're doing a distance learning, we're just not working on that skill right now. And then I think unfortunately that is gonna turn into a compensatory education discussion a few months down the road, because if your child has it on their IEP, they need it and they're not getting it. So it is undoubtedly going to cause educational harm in some respect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You kind of brought this up a little bit earlier about the social skills. Three or four parents have brought up the social skills issue in terms of, you know, they're wondering, you know, why that can't be done via Zoom and that kind of thing. In terms of recording the harm of social skills not being done, sort of what do you suggest, you know, for compensatory education? Sort of how do we record and document sort of when we can't see how our child is interacting? How do we, you know, talk about, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
I do. I would say some of it, you know, if some of those skills are going to be things like reciprocal conversation. So maybe it's something you can try practicing as, you know, parent to child, or even have, if you have multiple children, have siblings practice with one another, and then bring back to the IEP team and case manager, you know, I tried working on this with my child. They're really struggling with this aspect of it. Can you, if we can't provide the service right now, can you provide me some strategies that I can use at home? So I think this is all so new and so tricky, and it's going to require a lot of grace and patience from both sides when we're trying to navigate it. I've seen people ask the question. I've asked the question kind of myself, and I haven't gotten a documented written answer to why can't we pull groups of kids together and do these things online like we would at school. I've just heard the response, you know, it's a privacy violation, we can't do it. And when I've said, okay, like, tell me more, why do you think, you know, why is this a privacy violation? Why can't a group of parents be asked to agree to it for their children? I'm not getting a good answer on that. So unfortunately, I don't have a good answer to provide this evening. But I would suggest that as parents, we do the same thing. If you're being told that, you know, sorry, we can't do this right now, you need to say, can you please provide me the written documentation that supports that? Because that might help move things in a more positive direction, and it might help you get those compensatory services down the road.
Gotcha. And what about specific suggestions? You had mentioned, you know, if we're thinking that our kiddos need more support in this environment, what specific suggestions do you have sort of for wording those requests and asking for that? You know, we mentioned in terms of compensatory education, sort of, doing harm to the education. What about just asking for that extra stuff? What's the best way to frame that so that, you know, our educators will be more receptive?
So I think there's two sets of kind of doing that. There's doing that right now while we're all apart, and there's how do we do that when we get back to school kind of at some point in the future. So while we're doing this distance learning modality, I would say kill them with kindness. I try to always take that approach of being very positive and appreciative of, you know, all of the hard work that everyone's doing. But, you know, you guys know my child, how my child is in school better than I do, you know that this is not going to work for them. So I need you to provide more. You know, in school, my child was getting this, now they're not getting it at all. I need you to meet me in the middle and provide me some sort of strategy and some sort of direct service to address the specific need. So I always try to ask for everything with a smile on my face, so I'm more likely to get things moving in the right direction.
So what about if something is not on your child's IEP, does that change whether or not you can ask for it now?
I don't think so. Because IEPs are always changeable. You could always ask for an IEP amendment. You could always ask for a modification of goals and objectives and services. So why would it be different because we're doing it on Google? So especially because this is such a unique circumstance, and while you're working with your kiddo, you might notice something that is lacking that wasn't lacking when they were in school. So you can and should absolutely ask for that if you think it's something that they need.
And would that include mental health services?
I don't see why not. I don't know how MCPS is handling counseling services right now outside of my own child's elementary school. So I would say, you know, everyone should, I think our counselors care about our kids and they're very, very worried about their mental health. And if you're seeing that at home, definitely reach out to say, you know, my child is really struggling with this situation. Their anxiety is spiking. They're missing their friends. Can we schedule a time to talk? I would definitely be doing that. And then even asking that to be documented in the distance learning plan if it's something they need more consistently.
Have you seen that counselors are checking in? Like, have you heard of that from any other parents that counselors are actually doing that?
I have seen on the elementary school level and asked the counselor kind of mailbox set up through Google Classroom so that if a student wants to reach out to the counselor, they have a mechanism to do so. And then the counselor, I can only assume, is receiving those emails and acting on them.
Okay. Let's see here. One other question, which was kind of, is there any requirement for the school to provide live Zoom instruction? Like, in theory, could they just be providing packets? Like, what's the sort of,
The schools are required to provide instruction to general whatever they're providing to general education students, they have to make accessible to special education students. So I think if we were operating in a world where everybody was getting a packet, then it might perhaps be different. I still think you could ask for specialized instruction and direct videos in that set of circumstances. But I think that what has to happen is that special education students have to be given the opportunity to access the curriculum in the way that is being made available to their general education counterparts.
Gotcha. Okay. One other question. It may not be your area of expertise, but it's something that's just piqued my interest. Have you seen any involvement from PTAs in enabling helping with any of the services or anything happening right now?
I have seen PTAs be involved in communication and making sure parents know where to get Chromebooks, how to access help if they need it, where the food is, where they can go pick up food. I have not seen PTAs, nor have I offered as a PTA president to be involved in the service provision for individual students, because I don't see that as our role. But I have seen PTAs helping parents connect to the resources that they need. Primarily, when Zoom first launched, I felt like I was acting as live tech support. I was on our PTA Facebook page, sharing what was happening on my end, sharing what solutions were working on my end as a parent. And I've seen that MCC PTA has a COVID response Facebook page that is a wealth of information on all sorts of things that are going on in the county. So that's primarily what I've seen as the PTA role during this unusual pandemic period of education.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One other thing, have you seen any students themselves advocating for what they need? We had one parent ask about, you know, sort of the role of the student themselves and whether that can have a greater impact on getting the services that they might need during this time.
I, as a parent, am a huge proponent of student-led IEPs and for students getting involved in their IEP planning process as young as is appropriate for them and as individual students. Just before this started, I was looking at some stuff with my daughter and I said, okay, you need to email your teacher now and you need to tell her this is something that you need help with. So I absolutely 100% recommend that our students use this as an opportunity to learn self-advocacy and expand their self-advocacy skills, because this is their education and this is their grades and their forward progress. So if you have a student who is really wanting to be the one reaching out, I would 100% support and encourage that. I did an IEP meeting this morning for one of my kids sitting right at this desk, and he was right here next to me. And it was as good as it would have been in person, because we had the video access. He was able to ask all his questions. So I definitely think this is a great learning experience for our students on a lot of levels. And one of them is to expand their self-advocacy skills.
Gotcha. Well, and, oh, go ahead.
I would also say sometimes our kids are cuter than us, right? So if they're asking for help, it might come, it might be a little bit not, I don't want to say sympathetic, because I think our teachers really, for the most part, love and adore our children. But if they're hearing it from your student directly, they might feel that it's more important than if they're hearing it from mom.
Yes, I agree. Okay. What are the legal ramifications of saying, this isn't working. Like, my kid can't do this, especially for a special ed parent. It's like, you know, some of us are just like, no, we can't do it. So what are the ramifications of that?
So ramifications in what sense? Like,
do we lose our IEP? Do we if our children are unable to attend in this format, sort of what does that mean for legally, for their education in the future, sort of, you know, the whole thing?
So putting on my child welfare hat for a moment, I haven't seen attendance being taken. So I don't think we have to worry in that arena that they're going to say, you know, oh, it's education neglect because you're not forcing your child to sit on, you know, in front of a computer screen against their will. From a forward progress kind of retention and promotion standpoint, I would be shocked if MCPS said, because you didn't participate, you have to repeat this grade. I don't think they're huge on, generally speaking, retaining children anyway. So I don't see a lot of a risk there. As far as what happens with the fourth quarter, especially for our high school students who are in credit earning classes, we don't have the answer to the question yet of how are they going to be graded for this experience, and will an incomplete be an option for them so they can finish whatever coursework they need to finish with a teacher in a classroom down the road. So some of that is still kind of a question mark.
Gotcha. Okay. Sue and Melissa, I think I have, hold on, let me just check one more here. No, I think I've got all the chat questions.
Okay, I have a question from the chat that I think maybe could be, it piggybacks on what you were just saying. Can a request for compensatory education backfire into a determination to force the student to repeat a whole grade? Like, will large blocks of kids be repeating a grade as an en masse solution?
I don't think so. The reason I don't think so is because, one, there's a lot of social emotional harm done to children who repeat grades. There's not a lot of data or studies that back retention as an appropriate thing to do most of the time. So I can't see there being a massive move to hold children back whose parents want them promoted. So that is not something that would be of concern to me.
All right, well, I think we've covered what's in the chat. So now if we've missed one of your questions, please, you've got Kim's email right on the screen, so please just send the email question to Kim. Thank you so much, Kim. This was really a lot of great information. And to everyone who participated tonight, I hope you found this helpful. And please look for an email from XMinds tomorrow with a feedback survey. We want to know how well this met your needs. And I want to repeat, we will be posting the recording of this program on our website, probably either tonight or tomorrow morning. So if you've missed any part of it or you want to watch it all again, there's lots of information there. I'm sure it's worth watching and listening to a second time. You'll be able to do that. We hope to see you back at our next program next Thursday, when our guest expert will be Christina Morrissey, head of speech language therapy at the Treatment and Learning Centers. She'll be talking about how parents can help their kids get the most from their speech and OT sessions when those services are delivered virtually. All right, that's it for now. Many thanks to you, Kim, and thanks to all of you for joining us. Have a good night.
Thank you.